Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org or on the WDIY app. And podcasts of prior shows are also available under Public Affairs on WDIY.org or at yourfinancialchoices.com. Today is January 12, 2022. The markets were up today with the Dow closing at 36,290, the NASDAQ at 15,188, and the S&P up at 4,726. Our topic tonight is 2021 markets in review and looking ahead to 2022. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Eric is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And questions are also available through yourfinancialchoices.com. If you prefer not to speak live, give your question to Eric and he'll write it down and bring it into the studio. But otherwise, you can go live on air with us. I do have a guest this evening to help us review those markets. The wonderful Bill Henderson. Bill is Vice President and Head of Investments at Valley National Financial Advisors. He joined the team with more than 30 years of experience, including 26 years at BlackRock. Bill leads the firm's investment department, chairs the internal investment committee, and directs all investment research efforts. In this role, he provides investment analysis and assists the advisory teams with portfolio strategy and asset allocation direction. Meets frequently with representatives from global asset managers to discuss their views about the economy and financial markets, and he lends his own current market observation in Valley National Financial Advisors, the weekly commentary email newsletter. Bill's a native of Pennsylvania and received his undergraduate and graduate degrees from Penn State University in the areas of finance and investments. Bill, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Lori. It's good to be back.
Yeah, thank you very much. If for listeners who aren't familiar with Bill Henderson, Bill is coming on pretty much quarterly, wouldn't you say, Bill, to give us like a little bit of market recaps?
Yeah, this is my fourth time on, and it is nice to you and I schedule this about once a quarter to give kind of an update of the end of the quarter and a little bit of the outlook going forward. And this tonight, I hope we review 2021. And, you know, look into the crystal ball and see what we have in store for 2022.
That's great. And I think it helps to have kind of regular conversations about this, Bill, because I know even from my own personal experience, sometimes you hear information and you can only take in so much. But the more often you listen, it builds on itself and you start to kind of take in more of it. So I hope tonight that in looking, you know, at 2021, looking back and then looking ahead, I know that you typically will talk about all of the kind of inputs into that market review, which could include talking about the economy, the Fed, consumers, consumer spending, businesses, and how it kind of all works together. And I know that sometimes, and we have listeners at various levels of, you know, understanding of this. Some people are just kind of beginners. Some people, you know, read it daily and absorb it daily. They watch the, you know, CNBC or they listen to the news. So there's different sophistication levels on learning, but my goal with this show and WDIY is education. So there's learning at all levels. So if, as we're talking tonight, if we talk about some of these terms that may not be as familiar to, you know, maybe a new listener, maybe you could just spend a little time kind of, you know, clarifying what those are. We don't want to make assumptions about people's knowledge level, if you don't mind, because you're so smart, Bill, you know, and I'm used to listening to you, but it's hard to sometimes take it all in. So I'm speaking for the listeners and myself. But
yeah, no problem, Lori. If I say something that you think is out there, just let me know, and I would assume everybody in the world knows what quantitative easing is, but I certainly can understand. I'll do my best.
Yeah, I remember when that first came out, everyone say QE, QE. I'm like, what the heck is QE? So thank goodness we can Google so many of these terms nowadays. But it takes a while not only to understand the term, but what it means even once we understand the term. So why don't we start, though, you know, with the first, you know, we have 4 minutes before our first break. If we could kind of look backwards a little bit and review 2021.
Sure. Okay. Well, I mean, in terms of markets, 2021 was really a phenomenal year. I mean, we had excellent returns. We had the S&P coming in, the Standard & Poor's 500 index, which is a good measure, a benchmark measure of the equity markets, coming in at just under 29%. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, that's probably the most commonly referred to measure of stock markets on the news and things like that, that came in at 21%. And also two very good years for, you know, two great measures for equity markets in 2021. Now, bonds, that's probably not the best story there. The Barclays Bloomberg Ag, which is sort of an average of what bonds did last year, came in at -1.5. But when you think about what bonds are there for, they're there as your protection against times when risk assets sell off. So when there's a stock market, you know, crash of 5 or 3 or 8%, that's when you want to own bonds. And it's good to have a balanced portfolio. So last year overall, we had really strong returns in the markets. And I think a lot of that can be, you know, chalked up towards the great job that the Fed has done. You know, Jay Powell is the chairman of the Fed, and he actually has just gone through Senate confirmation hearings again before his vote for a second term. He got nominated by President Joe Biden to do that. You know, the Fed has kept rates at zero. They have done a really good job at managing the recession that came after the pandemic when, as you know, I've talked about throughout on the show about so much of the world's economy shut down and how they were going to deal with it. You know, I think Chairman Powell learned from previous Fed chairs of what to do. And if you look back at Bernanke and Yellen and Greenspan, three pretty famous Fed chairs, they may have been sometimes slow to react or sometimes paused over a longer period of time. With the pandemic like this and all that was happening, Jay Powell threw everything we had at it and said, we're going to buy bonds, we're going to put trillions of dollars into the economy, and we're going to lower rates to zero. Well, all three of those really helped in the recovery last year. And for most of the year, we saw excellent numbers from companies reporting earnings per share. We saw really strong numbers in terms of employment. You know, unemployment right now is at 3.9%. We haven't seen levels that low since prior to the pandemic. So we have really done a great job at managing the recession after the pandemic. The Fed has kept rates low. And we saw last year the consumer and the corporation and banks all coming out of the year in really healthy condition. So consumers had a lot of pent-up they had a lot of savings. There's a lot of pent-up demand there looking into 2022. We'll get into that. And then banks, which really remain the engine of growth in the economy, they lend out to corporations so they can build. They lend to mortgage for individuals to buy houses. They are in great shape. You know, this is a big difference from the previous recession, where it was really, you know, bank-caused housing crash, everything. Really, it was a long time to get out of this recession. Coming out of this, we have the keys to the economy in great shape, and I think we still have a little bit of time, you know, before, and there's really no concerns going into 2022 other than inflation. And I really want to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, that'll be a good segue or start to our next break. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with us or just give your question to Eric and he'll bring it in to me. And we'll continue our discussion with Bill Henderson, head of investments at Valley National Financial Advisors, as we talk about 2021 and the look ahead to 2022. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. And we are talking with Bill Henderson, head of investments at Valley National Financial Advisors, and we're doing a market review. Before we move on to talking about inflation, Bill, I just want to add a couple questions so to help kind of people understand. When we say, you know, the Fed's keeping rates zero, Jay Powell's managed, you know, the pandemic and the impact of that very well, and you said he's kept rates low or at zero, that means that's what flows into those banks being able to lend and people wanting to borrow at such low rates, right? So that keeps kind of money flowing in the system. And you can comment on that. But also you mentioned that the Fed is buying bonds. Can you tell people what that does to the system as well, if you don't mind?
Sure. So the Fed can directly control short-term interest rates, and it's called the Fed funds rate. That's the rate that banks borrow from each other, or it's the level set where the Fed can say we are setting Fed funds rates at this level. That's controlled directly by them. That's called just basically we're going to lower rates, and this is where we set them. Another way to get the overall rates lower, so the 10-year Treasury is a good measure of where long-term rates are. So you have Fed funds is basically overnight lending rate. Mm-hmm. Then you have the 10-year Treasury, which is a 10-year bond. The only way that the Fed can control that's a market level set, so they can't go out there and say this is the level we're going to issue 10-year Treasuries or we're going to set 10-year Treasuries. It's the market that sets that. But one way they can do it is called quantitative easing, where they're going to basically buy massive amounts of bonds, and essentially in increasing the price, you pull yields down. So it's essentially big demand for bonds forces yields lower. So the Fed is able to keep short-term rates low by their hand, saying, I'm keeping short-term rates low, and then force long-term rates low through quantitative easing, which is a way of just buying bonds, continue to buy, you know, any corporate bonds, but to buy asset-backed bonds, to buy treasury bonds, anything to keep the overall longer-term rates low. And that, again, keeps longer borrowing rates low so that not only banks can borrow low, but other corporations can borrow low or mortgage rates can be low. You know, they're the things that are set off the 10-year Treasury.
That's good. Thank you. I like that. There's all these little intricacies. You know, we hear the news. We hear that, you know, they're announcing rate changes or whatever, and the market reacts. But not everybody quite understands the impact or why there's an impact. So I appreciate that extra explanation. And anything that stands out particularly worrisome or positive about the year, about 2021?
Well, we ended the year with some pretty, by historical measures, some recent history, some pretty high inflation numbers. You know, and everyone now is talking about inflation. Is it here? Is it? You heard the word, I think the last time on your show, we talked about transitory inflation or temporary inflation versus more permanent inflation. And I think you know, it's potential that we have a little inflation sticking around a little bit longer than maybe the Fed planned. But remember, the Fed planned this. You know, the dual mandate of the Federal Reserve is full employment and inflation at a level that is respectable. And their target right now is 2 to 2.2%. So we've had many, many, many years of inflation well below 2%. So everyone knew we were going to have numbers way above 2 to get the average to be 2. Okay, and that's what we saw. Now, a jump to 6.8% and today's number that was released of 7%, you know, they're big numbers. And for Americans to see 7% inflation, it's not something we've seen since the 1980s, you know, and probably a lot of your listeners don't remember really big inflationary numbers, you know, times when we had prices increasing overnight by such substantial numbers that you notice it. You know, you may be a penny here in the price of this, a penny here in the price of that, you're not going to notice it. But when things like, you know, what we've seen last year, you know, used cars, for example, we saw a huge spike in used cars. And that doesn't, conceptually, it doesn't make sense. Why were used cars increasing so much? What happened? Well, it was really a fact of there weren't enough chips and other raw materials, so microchips, computer chips, to make new cars. So the demand for cars was still there, but there was no supply of new cars. The supply of new cars generally kept the supply of used cars high, so the prices of both of them were kind of moderated. But when the supply of microchips became difficult, the supply of new cars became difficult, so all of a sudden used cars increased in price. And we weren't used to that. We're like, well, why is a used car increasing? It's not supposed to do that. But we saw that. We also saw food, you know, for the first time, big increases in food numbers that, again, we weren't used to. And then even simple things like clothing is finally starting to show, you know, big increases. You know, we don't have the easy supply chain of goods and services from overseas that we used to have for manufacturing and shipping of clothes. So a lot of the demand that was there remained, but the supply wasn't as strong as it was in previous years. So
can I ask you a question about that, Bill, to interrupt?
Yep, go ahead.
Is it twofold, that story? Because when we talk about supply and demand, the supply, you had workers or countries that might have been shutting down operations to, you know, limit the contagion or whatever. But then we also heard about, you know, ships sitting in, you know, offshore that couldn't get in because of people not being able to unload the ships or not enough ships. So is it a combination? And do we see any, light at the end of the tunnel on either of those, either the manufacturing, you know, going back up to supply the goods that are in demand and then actually being able to ship them and get them off those boats?
Yeah, I think pretty much everything you said is right on. The a lot of the countries that used to supply a lot of cheap goods, not only supply cheap goods, but supply them quickly. You know, like a just-in-time process. You need a part, you need a load of iron ore, boom, it shows up at the port. The port unloads it, ships it out, and it gets to the plant or factory. We saw all that shut down. We saw the factories that produce clothing shut down because of the pandemic. We saw the ships stop traveling because of the pandemic. And then when the ships finally started to get goods and services and start moving over to ports like Los Angeles and Longport, the two biggest ports in the United States, what happened? There were no dock workers. There were no truckers because that year where things were really slow and difficult and dodgy, we saw labor shortages. So all these ports were waiting to be offloaded. So it wasn't worked out. It was just, you had the supply sitting there. It's just going to take time for all that to unravel. And I think, you know, whether or not Omicron is the last strain and the pandemic is really, you know, waning itself away and COVID has gone out of the news, you know, I think that's yet to be seen for sure. But what we are seeing is at least some of the flow of goods and services is starting to work its way through the system. So they're being manufactured, they're being shipped, they're being offloaded, and they're getting to the end user. So I think some of the inflation is going to be transitory. It just might take a little bit longer to be transitory. But some of the other inflation, it's always been difficult to get rid of certain things. But I do think we will see some prices on goods and services come down.
Okay. When we come back from this next break, Bill, I'm going to ask you about the components of inflation, too, and how sometimes we might be looking at a couple different numbers. So, folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Psst! Did you know your phone is a radio? You can tune into WDIY anywhere, on the go, with WDIY's phone app. Download for free from the Apple or Google store and turn your phone into your trusted public radio. The easy-to-use app lets you listen to WDIY on your phone, live, and play all your favorite music programs on demand. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to many choices, real voices.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We have in the on the call with us Bill Henderson, Head of Investments at Valley National Financial Advisors. We're talking about the market, 2021. We're going to be looking forward to 2022, and we're kind of, I would say, breaking down some of the impacts or elements of watching the markets and what we have to pay attention to. And let me tell you, it sounds to me like Bill pays attention to everything, because for you to know which ports in California are the largest, you know, I mean, it's just crazy stuff, Bill. So I appreciate that you're, you know, with us and can kind of pay attention to all these moving parts. It's so much to pay attention to. But I did want to go back to something, because they did just announce, I think, the inflation numbers this morning. We all kind of knew it was coming in. I think it was like 6.8. But can you kind of explain to our listeners, like, you know, it's not necessarily go into a panic, oh, 7% inflation, which is the number I think we heard this morning. Break that down for us a little bit, if you don't mind.
Sure. No problem, Lori. So thanks. So today they did announce, you know, a few measures of inflation. And the reason that it wasn't a shock is they were basically expecting core CPI. So CPI stands for Consumer Price Index. Sometime around the 70s, something that I don't know, Lori, the 70s, they removed food and energy. So somebody decided that's not important enough to be included in inflation. We're only going to measure things that people don't use. Nobody uses food or energy, so let's pull them out. You know, I'm being sarcastic, obviously, but now we measure core CPI. So that's Consumer Price Index, but just a core basket of goods and services. That came out, they were expecting 7%. So it came out at 7%, which means the markets liked it because it wasn't more than anyone expected. If it had been 8%, people would have said, oh my gosh, we're really behind the eight ball. You know, we are going to see higher interest rates faster than anyone thought, which was technically could be bad for the markets, because remember, we like to live on cheap money. So then if we had a number lower than 7, that would have said, well, you know, we really could have rallied on that news because inflation is already taming itself. But we saw a number come right in at expectations. So that's one measure, the core CPI. So that's what people pay. So consumer price index. Another measure of inflation is PPI. That's producer price index, and that's a basket of goods that corporations or producers pay when they get goods and materials. So there's two measures. You want to measure, is the consumer paying a lot more, and is the producer paying a lot more? And the two of them have been, you know, at elevated levels, at least for the latter part of 2021. So that says, you know, okay, prices are rising. You know, what should we worry about? And that's something, again, that I go back and say, the Fed wanted this. You know, we wanted higher inflation. We got it. Now, the tricky part is, are we going to be able to, you know, come up with this soft landing? So raise rates just enough that it doesn't spook the market. We still continue to have growth and continue to have, you know, prosperous economy and even, you know, good, decent returns on the stock market. But one thing about inflation, you know, it's, if you think about what the pandemic did, there are some deflationary things that happened in the pandemic. So offsetting the prices of things that I mentioned earlier, chips and used cars, food and some prescription drugs and other medical services. But there were deflationary pressures like work from home. A lot of people, you know, obviously worked from home. That lessened the demand for oil and lessened demand for gasoline. You know, oil's at, I believe, $75 a barrel, but at the end of the previous recession in 2009, it was $140 a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
So it's come down a lot. You know, now we did see, so that's one measure. We also, travel and entertainment, if you're in the sales world, you're not traveling nearly as much as you were. And I know I've booked some you know, modest travel recently, you know, for business and pleasure, and both prices are way down. I mean, train tickets and plane tickets are significantly lower. Plus the savings of, you know, not needing as much professional clothing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just aren't, you're not spending in the same areas that you were. So there were some offsetting deflationary things from the pandemic, but largely it's, you know, what I talked about, where we're seeing inflationary numbers coming from, you know, areas where, you know, again, the core rather than, you know, food and energy, it's like core things people are paying for have increased in price.
Mm-hmm. And the demand, I suppose, ran some of that too, like with the housing and improvements, because people were staying home and running up the cost of lumber and things like that, as well as the, you know, delivery issues, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. Housing had a, I mean, talk about a year. Housing had a booming year last year. I believe the overall housing was up about 20-23% last year, sort of an overall market of house prices. But yet rents didn't increase as much. And if you think about why, you know, people were buying houses, but rents in some of your major cities were down as people fled to the suburbs but were buying houses. I mean, you know that. You've seen the stories of bidding wars and houses being on the market
mm-hmm.
for hours rather than weeks. So, and then once you move in, what do you want to do if you're either a new home buyer or you're moving into a new home? You're going to want to renovate. You're going to want to buy new furniture. You're going to want to, you know, rip out a wall and put up a different wall. So we saw, you know, demand from different things all at once and in a compressed time period.
Mm-hmm. I want to, before we, you know, talk about 2022, which we'll probably move into at the second half of the show, I want to go back to something else that you started off at the beginning, talking about the markets having a phenomenal year, and the S&P Standard & Poor's 500, 29% return, the Dow 21%. From time to time, you will hear people say, hey, the market performed 29%. Why didn't my portfolio get 29%? Or, oh, my advisor isn't beating the market, and I want 29%. And in fact, I had someone say today, you know, I watch my balance every single day, and I lost money since yesterday. So we have to marry that with your comment about the Barclays Bloomberg Ag that had a negative 1.5% return last year. And you had also mentioned it is still important to have, you know, fixed income or a bond allocation for those times when we are in a lot more, you know, when we have volatility and we can tap that fixed income when needed. So can you talk for a moment about, you know, as advisors, we'll talk about diversification. People shouldn't necessarily be looking at, you know, did my portfolio return 29% just because we hear those are the numbers in the market. And we have about a minute before our break, Bill. So if we have to go into the next half of the show, we can finish there
okay.
as well.
Yeah, I can get started. I talk fast, but I'll try not to talk that fast. You know, you're right, Lori. A gauge of the market is not a gauge of your portfolio is not what the Dow does or what the S&P does. You know, they are just two measures, right? That's just here's what the stock market does. Very few people, I mean, anybody, whether you're in a pension plan or you manage a pension plan or you're an individual investor, have every single one of their dollars in just the stock market, right? Most people have what's called a balanced portfolio. So they own some stocks, they own bonds, and sometimes they own alternatives like real estate or a commodities fund, or you know, something that is in the alternatives to cash bonds or equities. Mm-hmm. So we can talk if we're running up against a break, we can start right at that point after the 6:30.
Yeah, I would appreciate that because I think it's worthwhile kind of just reviewing that and keeping things in perspective, and that's what helps people manage their emotions through volatile markets, which I think when we talk about 2022, we could be expecting some more volatility. So I think it's really important for people to understand diversification for themselves and how that works with these market measures and benchmarks. Folks, we are at the halfway point. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good evening, WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm James Johnson. It is 6:30. We have 29 degrees and fair skies. Lehigh Valley weather. Tonight, mostly cloudy, low 24. Thursday, partly sunny skies, a high of 42, then mostly cloudy Thursday night, low 29. Friday, mostly sunny skies, a high of 37, then mostly clear Friday evening, low 8 degrees. Saturday, mostly sunny, a high of 19, then partly cloudy Saturday night, low 7. Do keep advised with our animals during the cold weather. Coming up, your financial choices as we go back with Lori Siebert, followed by In the Tradition with Tom Druckenmiller. But now, back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, James. Welcome back to the show, folks. And I have with me Bill Henderson, Head of Investments at Valley National Financial Advisors. And we're talking about the markets in review, and then we'll be looking ahead to 2022. And I like setting the table, Bill, kind of what we've been talking about, those things that do affect the markets, which in turn affect our portfolios. This is why we like to talk about these topics and help people understand them to know what to expect and the impact of what things are said, and then all of a sudden there's a reaction in the market, and that could last for a day, and then it could be a different reaction the next day and the next day. So overall, we do want to talk about diversification. And then as we move into our discussion about what to look forward to 2022, I think this is going to kind of help put it all together of why we pay attention to these things, not just the equities, which is investing in like companies, people, but also in the bond market. So, Bill, if you want to talk about the importance of diversification and, you know, as we move forward talking about inflation and the Fed controlling rates and what that is all going to mean, but how that's going to work together in our portfolios and helping with us, I would say, tolerate volatility going into 2022 if you think that we might have that. So let's first talk about diversification.
Okay, yeah, thanks, Lori. So I was just earlier saying, you know, it's the very few investors have all their money just in the stock market. The typical investor, whether an institutional investor like a large pension fund or they're an individual investor, retail investor, they have a balanced portfolio. So, the sort of benchmark everyone talks about, you'll see it in print, you hear it on CNBC, is the 60-40 portfolio. So that's 60% equities, 40% bonds. So if you look at your numbers and my numbers as I started the show, you know, if you have a 60-40 portfolio and you had a benchmark, just the Standard & Poor's, so 60% of your portfolio was in something that returned a little over 28%, and 40% of your portfolio was in something that returned about negative 1.4%. Now you say, well, why would I possibly want something that's negative? Well, that was last year. I can't tell you what's going to happen this year, but all we can say is over history, over long periods of time, for most investors, it makes sense to have a balanced portfolio. The younger you are, more risk. The older you are, generally, typically more risk. And the way to look at bonds or stocks, okay, I generally look at the bond portion of a portfolio, so the fixed income part, mm-hmm. as the risk management side of the equation. So this is the part of my portfolio that I'm going to say, this is here in case there's a calamity, in case there's a sell-off, in case there's some big thing where risk assets, so risk assets are generally considered to be equities or even riskier assets, sell off, meaning big 5, 10, 15% corrections. That's when you want to own risk management assets like bonds. The other side of the equation, so the equity side, is my return generation. That's where I look. I want that part of the portfolio, whether it's 60, 40, 70, 30, or whatever you want it to be, 50, 50, that part of the portfolio is the return generation side. This is where I look to those investments to generate return year over year and give me a pot of money that grows over time with some semblance to, you know, a balance of your portfolio and a balance towards risk. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's not really accurate to just say the Dow got 21% last year. Where's my 21%, you know, Mr. Financial Advisor? Mm-hmm. It's more important to understand, you know, what's my portfolio, what's my risk tolerance, and how am I invested? And then decide how you did.
Well, and I love that you said it's return generation, you know, over time. So to my point earlier where someone says, hey, I looked at my portfolio, I keep track of it every day, and I lost money since yesterday. We're talking about return generation over time. That's the key word, because it doesn't mean you're going to get a positive return every single day on your portfolio. I mean, it sounds silly to even talk about, but these are questions that sometimes people have. They think, I've lost money, and they're looking at it at a moment of time.
Yeah, I mean, probably the most nerve-wracking thing you can do is look at your portfolio every day and just sit there and watch it. I can tell you, because that's what I do for a living. I look at numbers all day, and sometimes I'm happy, sometimes I'm not. But most of the time, you know, I love that part, but I don't look at my own portfolio. Maybe every other week I look and say, oh, that's what it's doing. I just feel I need to pay attention to macro things for clients and be able to talk more about bigger picture things than just the minutiae of my own individual portfolio. And it'll drive you nuts, you know. But what you really want to focus on long term, you know, 5, 10 years, am I making money? Am I, you know, and take into account your risk level. Right. Mm-hmm. If you can stomach a 30% return, maybe you do want to be all in equities. But remember, when your portfolio goes from, you know, $10,000 down to $500, right? You're not going to be happy, or maybe you will be happy because you can stomach that type of risk. But people need to just have an understanding of where their risk level is alongside of what their return expectations are.
Okay, so let's talk, let's take this into 2022 now. So we've talked about 2021 and how the Fed helped, you know, control the interest rates with the, you know, buying bonds and keeping the Fed funds rate low. What can we expect in 2022? And do you expect more volatility and inflation? You can comment on whatever you might think would be important for our listeners to know.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I always expect volatility. That way I can't be wrong.
Uh-huh.
You know, if it's a little volatility, I was still right. If it's a lot of volatility, I told you so. So I always expect volatility. I mean, that's what we're here for, is to kind of deal with that. But, yeah, I think there's going to be volatility. We have a lot of unknowns still that we have to deal with. But, you know, what the Fed has to do, I think the big thing that everyone is watching, and you can just, you know, look at the news or listen to this, you know, the business channels, is the Fed going to be able to remove what's considered excess accommodation? So there's two things I can talk about. Accommodation is, right now, the Fed is accommodating with monetary policy, meaning monetary policy is where interest rates are really low. So they're accommodating, they're keeping interest rates low. They have to remove that, or else inflation's going to get what we call runaway inflation, which is what we don't want. 6% every year for 5 or 10 years, I think we'd have a real problem on our hands. So how do you deal with excess accommodation? So you have to remove some of the monetary stimulus that has been put into the system. So here again, monetary stimulus, aside from just rates being low, the Fed has been buying bonds, and they have a huge balance sheet now. So the Fed buys bonds, they put them on the balance sheet, and they sit there. And that process allows long-term rates, so the 10-year Treasury, to remain at levels that are accommodative to the economy growing. Mm-hmm. So removing all that can be done in a couple of different ways. You can let the balance sheet simply mature as a bond matures and you don't replace it. You can taper bond purchases. So a lot of people have been using that term, you know, tapering, mm-hmm. tapering bonds. The Fed's going to taper it. So all that really means is, just think about it. Tapering is just removing or lowering or shrinking. Mm-hmm. So they're lessening their bond purchases. They're still going to purchase bonds. They're just not going to purchase as many. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, they're going to raise rates. And if you look at what we call Fed fund futures, so this is where the forward markets are pricing where Fed funds are going to be. Right now, you know, you could say there's a rate hike coming in March. There's about a 75% chance that we'll see a rate hike in March of this year. And as long as that's telegraphed and the Fed talks about it and Jay Powell does it at his press conferences and says, you know, we're planning on raising rates 25 basis points, he's not going to shock the markets. And I think he'll learn from previous Fed chairs, specifically Bernanke and Yellen, who were, you know, academics, and they knew, how can I do this? They knew to telegraph their moves and keep surprises away from the market. Nothing upsets Wall Street more than an unknown or a shock or a big surprise.
That's interesting, Bill. And that has evolved. So would you say Greenspan didn't telegraph and then Bernanke started, you know, maybe throwing that out and Yellen learned from him and now Powell's learned from Yellen?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, I think historians will look back and say it changed after Volcker. So I'm old, but I'm not old enough to remember Volcker as a Fed chair. I just know the name.
Right.
The first Fed chair that I knew was Alan Greenspan, and everybody called him the Maestro because he was this incredible cerebral guy that stood up there and used big words like conundrum and irrational exuberance. And, you know, it scared everybody because nobody knew what he was going to say. There was no pre-announcement. There was no transparency. There were no things like the dot plots and others. That could be a whole show on the dot plots, Lori. But after Greenspan, you had Bernanke and Yellen who said, you know, let's have press conferences. Let's talk about this. Let's say this is what we're going to do. People used to watch the size of Greenspan's folder as he walked from his office over to you know, what was called the Humphrey Hawkins testimony. See, is he going to talk a lot? Or is he going to talk a little? And that would give them a little bit of information about what he was going to say. Whereas right now, the Fed is the most transparent I've ever seen them. And I think because they've learned, don't spook the markets. You know, they want it. It's very easy to say, this is what we plan to do. It's coming. Hey, guess what? We just did it, and you knew it was coming. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, if Chairman Powell can do that in the right way, he can remove the accommodations in the market, give a little bit of the inflation, you know, move it back to where we're, you know, it's transitory, take some of the inflation away, try and hit that magic 2% average and keep employment full, you know, where it is, the full employment level. He will have done what, you know, is everyone thinking, can it be done? And one more thing, if you look at rising rates, it's not necessarily a bad thing. And I'll get into that, you know, in a second, if you, that's kind of the next thing I want to follow.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead. We have, we have 2 minutes before our next break.
Okay. So great. So in the 2016 to 19 period, that's the last time we saw rising rates. And this is when you saw a quarter of a point move at every Fed meeting, and it was telegraphed, it was widely known this is going to happen. During that time period, we saw short-term rates rise, the long-term rates, as measured by the 10-year Treasury, rise, but we also saw the S&P 500 gain a little over 50%. So higher rates does not mean the end of the stock market rally. It does not mean the end of a strong economy, especially when we're coming from a zero base. You know, zero is really cheap money. 2% is still pretty cheap money. So we could get to a place where we have higher rates from here, but still have what could be considered an accommodating Fed, especially by long-term standards. You go back, you know, 10, 20, 30 years, you know, money is still pretty cheap.
So it's accommodative, but not excess accommodation, as you kind of hinted at the start of our discussion here.
Right. The trick is, everybody knows we have excess accommodation. Look, we have zero interest rates, Lori, with the economy growing where it's growing and unemployment where it is. That doesn't really make sense. When have we ever had rates this low unemployment at 3.9% and the economy growing as strong as we have? We have,
mm-hmm.
but we haven't had a pandemic since 1919 either.
Mm, right. The pandemic certainly has thrown a wrench in a lot of our expectations of what we're used to kind of looking at historically. We are at our last break, and when we come back, Bill, I might want to ask you if we know that a rate hike is coming, 75% chance, in March, and then possibly subsequent to that, too. What might we see people doing or investors doing in the meantime, until then? Does it change what we're doing over the next couple months before those rate hikes hit? Or is it just really a blip? So I'll ask you that when we come back. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You are listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1 and also available on the WDIY app. Podcasts of prior shows are available at yourfinancialchoices.com and also under public affairs on wdiy.org. So, Bill, to tag on to our discussion prior to the last break, I just wondered, you know, if the Fed is kind of telegraphing what they're doing, and we kind of everybody knows, so that we don't have such a big shock to the market, are there little things that are happening right now in anticipation of that? Or, you know, is it really just not a big deal because it's just going to be little baby steps for a while?
No, I think it's a little of both. I do believe it's going to be baby steps for a while, right? Mm-hmm. If the Fed raised rates 1%, that would be exactly what I told you they don't want to do. They don't want to shock the market. But a quarter basis point will easily be digested. It'll give the markets a chance to start to think about, okay, I can do this. We can take 25 basis points at each meeting for the next, you know, 2 years and get to be where we were before the pandemic. That doesn't mean the economy's going to shut down. It doesn't mean lending's going to shut down. We're not moving into a recession. We're actually going to continue to have pretty strong growth. And I think that is indicative of the strong labor markets, the relatively easy money that we're going to continue to see, and the fact that companies are still releasing big earnings per share releases, you know, very favorable numbers. That means more hiring, more spending on CapEx, you know, and all of which just leads to, you know, a growing economy. So I think it's you have to understand and believe that this excess accommodation that was purely created from the pandemic and the actions to halt sort of a deep depression by the Fed to lower rates was, you know, it was a reaction, and now it just has to be removed, the excess accommodation. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to go to a point where it's accommodating but not excessively accommodating. And I do believe that the important thing to look at is, you know, are companies going to grow? Are earnings going to still be favorable for corporations? And I think we'll see that, especially for most of 2022.
Yeah, and you know, I think the word is, while we have seen increased cases of Omicron and other variants coming to the fore, we have also been understanding that it seems like the infection or the death rate isn't as what it was when we first, you know, had COVID hitting us. So I think that people are going to start to kind of hopefully it'll slow down a little bit, the impact of it, I guess. And so we can't necessarily anticipate that. And we'd probably have to see several months of it kind of smoothing out, I suppose.
I think we're in a period, you know, look, we're in the winter. It's supposed to be single digits in, you know, Philadelphia and the Lehigh Valley this weekend. So mm-hmm. who was going to be out spending anyway? So mm-hmm. if you have to be home, you know, sort of sheltering in place, you know, worried about the Omicron variant, it probably isn't a bad time to be doing it. If this were a 72-degree day in April, I don't think people would want to stay home. You know, mm-hmm. I think we would see, you know, a different reaction. So if it takes a little bit more of you know, social distancing and sheltering and sort of, you know, being a little safe for a little bit longer, I think we'll get there. And you did see, you know, very few places immediately shut down. They didn't say this is what's happening. I mean, you're seeing that in some other countries where mm-hmm. it, you know, big spikes are taking place, but not really in the U.S. I think we're hesitant to do that again. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that the time of the year, the seasonality has a different impact on it.
Well, you mentioned other countries. Let's talk about other countries. Going into 2022, what are you, any comments? China, emerging markets?
China. You know, look, China has been a tough story. It was a tough story last year. I think it'll be a tough story this year. You know, whether we want to agree, believe it, or recognize it, China's a communist country. And they're going to do things the way they want to do it. And if that means redistribution of wealth, because there's been a lot of lopsided wealth created in that country over the last 10 years, as sort of this sort of entrepreneurialism has taken over, but it got a little bit out of hand. There are quite a number of really wealthy Chinese families became so wealthy that they drew the attention of the government, and when that happens, they can confiscate your goods. They can tell you, hey, you know what, redistribute this, you know, pay your employees more, or we're just going to take it, or maybe you need to go away for a couple of months and figure out that, you know, who's really in charge here. So that's something that people really have to grasp and understand about investing in China. That said, you know, we have emerging market exposure at Valley National, and a lot of clients do, whether they know it or not. You have exposure to China. And the way I sort of foot that with my previous comments about China is, when I look down the road, when I look 10 years from now, is China going to be bigger? And I can't say no to that. I'm sorry. They will be bigger. They mm-hmm. absolutely will be bigger. And, you know, it's a really difficult place to invest, but I just see so much happening there that you can't ignore it and say, I'll just ignore that entire segment of the second largest economy in the world and think that I'm not missing something. Now, this again goes back to, you know, way back when I said 60-40 balanced portfolio, knowing what you own. No one should own everything in you know, a Chinese stock market investment. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you should probably have some allocation to emerging markets. I mean, that's where the strongest growth in boom years comes from. You know, countries where they're going to really show, you know, exponential growth. But at the same time, remember, you know, the type of regime you're buying into and what can happen. And, you know, we saw that a lot last year with some of the real estate markets in China and how difficult they were to invest in, and information was sparse. I mean, that's the thing that makes, you know, investors worried. As I said before, we hate unknowns, and we hate things where we can't quantify it. And a lot of times you have that with China.
Mm-hmm. Bill, remember when we would talk about the brick and the pigs and the, you know, negative interest rates on foreign bonds? What that seems to, you know, just kind of have gone away. I mean, how much do we have to pay attention to what's going on? Obviously, we should just, you know, from natural concern about the whole world. But as far as the markets and what we're investing in, how much are we paying attention to some of these other foreign countries and what's going on there, whether it's, you know, political or market?
Yeah, that's a great question, Lori. And that's one thing where you look and say, you know, why would we possibly want to own any U.S. bonds? Aren't they just going to really do lousy this year? Because you said, Bill, rates are going higher. But remember, our rates at you know, 180 right now on the 10-year are still favorable. You know, German bonds, so their 10-year bond, their equivalent of the 10-year bund, it's called BUND, is yielding negative 0.6. So you give them money, they barely give you back your money in 10 years. Mm. You know, so we're still an active asset class. Now, there's some currency, you know, transactions you have to take into account, but overall, you know, having a positive rate on our returns on our bonds still is an attractive investment. So, yes, you know, remember, rates higher, bond prices lower, so that's why people are saying is our bonds the best place to be. But I still think there's an absolute buyer of U.S. bonds, and especially looking at last year, no one would have thought, but bond funds had the biggest flows in mutual funds, more flows than equity funds. So, you know, the balanced portfolio, if your equity portfolio rises by a specific amount, in order to rebalance your portfolio, you're going to have to take some of those gains in equities and move them over the bonds. So you're forced to constantly keep your portfolio in balance and therefore forced to buy bonds, even if you know, well, with rates going higher, should I own this? But going back again, you know, risk management is part of the portfolio. So a balanced portfolio is a better strategy.
Mm-hmm. And some people are looking for other places for that fixed income sleeve. And you mentioned earlier, and we're not making any investment recommendations at all, but you mentioned earlier that typically we're thinking bonds and equities, but there are other alternatives, which could be include real estate and commodities. And there could be a place for that in someone's portfolio as well, if they may need to rely on their fixed income portfolio for some income generation and wouldn't be getting it necessarily from the bonds. So there could be some alternatives for people.
Yeah, absolutely, Laura. You know, there's real estate investment trusts that pay, you know, they invest in real estate, and then you basically get either the mortgage payments or the rent payments, and it's filtered through to the holder of the REIT, real estate investment trust. Mm-hmm. Or there's other alternatives. You know, there's a lot of different things that you can talk to your advisor or financial professional or read about. You know, you mentioned earlier, you know, I Google all this. Look, I readily admit I Google a lot of things, and I say, let me make sure I know exactly what GDP is, C plus I plus G. You know, you want to know that? It's right in there. And, you know, just look up alternative investments. And if you start reading it, you know, you get an understanding. But there again, these are not everyday plain vanilla investments. And they really take time. A lot of times you have to be what's called a QIP, a qualified investment person. So, mm-hmm. you know, you have to do a little bit of background on the person. But I think, you know, it's worth talking about and learning what else is there besides just bonds and stocks. You know, right. The market for investments has gotten bigger and bigger and more varied. So, you know, the spectrum is really left and really right, and there's a lot of things that you can buy to balance out your portfolio or to add risk or return.
And again, we're not talking about investing in anything in particular, just education-wise. People also talk about Bitcoin, but we've also seen some fluctuations in that as well. And very scary.
Huge fluctuations. I mean, I'm glad you're not going to ask me to talk much about Bitcoin, Bitcoin is just one of those things. I mean, you know, it the idea behind blockchain and Bitcoin it's a lot, you know, and you really want to do your homework on something like that and really decide, if I invest in this, how much do I really want to put in this? Because we've seen Bitcoin go from $60,000 down to $30,000. You know, that's a lot. Right. And you're not just buying a little bit. You know, it really, that's one of the alternative investments that you should really do your homework on. Yeah. and not say that Bill Henderson recommended you buy it.
Right, right. And if something's too good to be true, it could be too good to be true as well. And, you know, right. Anybody who invested with Bernie Madoff knew about that as well. Bill, next week I'm going to mention before I let you go that Ryan Mulhern from the firm who has his CIMA designation, Certified Investment Management Analyst designation, is going to join me to talk about that designation. And then we're also going to talk about some behavioral finance I would say heuristics or rules of thumb and how that understanding behavioral finance might help people in, you know, managing their own emotions and reactions to the market. So I think that'll be a good show as well. And I thank you for being here, Bill, so much. And I know you have to run off to another meeting. So, folks, thank Bill Henderson, Head of Investments at Valley National Financial Advisors. And, Bill, you'll join us again in at the next quarter end, I suppose.
Absolutely. Thank you, Laura. Okay. It's always a pleasure. I really appreciate you having me on. Have a great night.
Okay, thanks. You too, Bill. Okay, folks, as I mentioned, next week I'll have Ryan Mulhern, who will join me to discuss the CEMA designation and what behavioral finance is and how it will help us to understand it. I want to thank Eric for being here, monitoring the phones tonight, and thank James Johnson for being here as well, along with my guest, Bill Henderson. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.